me home tonight. Oh, down beside that red firelight. Oh, you're gonna let it all hang out. Fat bottom girls, you make the rocking world go round.
So we're gonna kick off our topic for today, which will hopefully take less than 8 minutes, because that's all the time we have left.
We got plenty of time.
Split this into episodes. All right. Wow. So in our episode about Anime Boston, we mentioned, we had a member of the staff who had the camera, who took the picture of the guy proposing. She was telling the story about the guy proposing to his girlfriend at Anime Boston. So that guy eventually found us and wrote to us, and he was dressed as a Doc Hack character, if you'll remember. So he writes, the Doc Hack guy. Hellos, I've never heard of Ninja Consultant until today, but I have to say you guys rule. A friend of mine sent me a link to the episode and I listened to it. I'm an instant listener now. You see, I'm the Dot Hack guy that proposed to the Slayers girl mentioned near the end of the episode. We both think that's pretty cool that we're being talked about a month afterwards. Thanks goes out to the Anime Boston staff members that made it so memorable by filming it for us. And he sent a picture of himself proposing. So I wrote back and I asked him to tell his story about how he met his girlfriend. So he writes, sure, this is basically the super condensed version of our story. It all started over a decade ago on ye old AOL. Back in the day, there was an anime known as Sailor Moon that was not only insanely popular, but had an insanely popular chat room on AOL to go with it. One day, Dave had been in that room talking about his new screen capture device and how he could make screenshots of Sailor Moon episodes with it. April, who was beginning her first in a long list of Sailor Moon-related websites, happened to be in the room that day as well, and I am Dave about his screenshots. The two became fast friends and shared their love of Sailor Moon. And that was only the beginning. The more they talked, the more they found they had in common, ranging from anime interests to other topics such as Star Trek and time travel. Years passed and their feelings for each other grew. Friendship turned to love, and in 2006, at Anime Boston, after several previous visits, April and Dave were engaged. They're now currently in the middle of moving into their first apartment together and are planning their wedding for next year. So you see, it seems Sailor Moon really is the soldier of love and justice after all.
Ah, nerd love.
I know.
Sweet, sweet nectar.
You have nerd love. My nerd love story goes like this. I was in NYU Sci-Fi Club, and Noah was in Columbia Sci-Fi Club, and in some strange venture to get more of the clubs to do things together, Noah ventured to NYU, where I met him. Where did I meet you? At Hal's birthday party the first
time. Well, technically you met me at Hal's birthday party, but...
But whatever.
Your impression of me there was unfavorable.
It's true. Because you said something jerky right off the bat.
Well...
But that's why people in Orlando should give Daryl Surrett a try.
Right.
Because just because someone says something really obnoxious right when you first meet them, ruining that 3 seconds
first... And continues to say obnoxious things nonstop.
To the point where he's upsetting cosplayers and driving away potential customers by making derogatory remarks.
And opens his mouth and a solid beam of crazy is projected.
Killing everyone else in the room.
That doesn't mean that you shouldn't give him a chance.
Right.
Continually. Because he's a good guy. I'll vouch for him.
He also shoots people with clown pistols.
Yeah.
I want to play that clip from Geek Nights, but I don't know if they've posted it yet.
Yeah, speaking of Geek Nights, I don't know what the geek relationship dynamic was there, but when we visited them, there were a couple of girls hanging around.
Yeah.
And
they were all taken, I think. All their boyfriends were there. Oh, so I'm going to talk about the overwhelming problems with the anime and overall the nerd populace dating scene. Specifically related to anime, there's this current problem where... So back in the day, there was Star Blazers, and a lot of guys really liked Star Blazers and Akira and whatever, Dragon Ball Z or something. Not really the most girl-friendly shows. So you'd go to an anime con 15 years ago, and it's primarily males. And a lot of those guys are older anime fans now, maybe pushing 30, pushing a little older than that. Not talking about you specifically. Yeah, I am. But... Yeah. Then it happened that Sailor Moon began airing in, whatever, 1990 or something. Well, there was a Pokemon generation, and Pokemon is very gender neutral. But when Sailor Moon hit the airwaves, it brought a giant generation of girls into anime.
I hear you like Mudkips.
Including me. I think that's a 4chan thing. Anyway.
I don't know what you're talking about.
So, including me, but also a lot of people much younger than me. Like some of the people on my friends list who have watched Sailor Moon when they were 4 and not when they were 15 like I was. Being little kids, they watched the show and, you know, grew up as anime fans. But that doesn't mean they're that old now. So that means there are tons of girls who are in anime but a lot of those girls are still in high school, which creates a problem where there's a massive number of single girls in high school and a very large number of single guys who are in their 30s.
Oh, I don't know if it's so large. I can't identify more than... Actually, this Otakon...
Or their late 20s.
This Otakon, I saw more people my age. I don't know if it's just because I was really paying attention this time, but I in previous years, it's occurred to me that really no one is above the age of 17
I think
18.
I think there were a lot of older people. But I think what happened was, on Saturday night, when things got really crowded, including that old school anime panel, what happened was both of, like, the masquerade and the rock concert were both being held off-site. So it's my theory that younger people who attend masquerades and participate in masquerades all went to the masquerade off-site. And people who were, you know, teenage screaming fans of J-rock or whatever, they went to the concert. And that left only older people who were interested in neither the concert nor the masquerade. So it's a strange kind of crowding.
That's us.
Yeah. And all those people going to the 4chan panel where you have to be over 18 to get into it anyway. That left our demographic just hanging out. Apparently all of the security and Otakon staff went to police those events and patrol the entrance where baseball fans were walking back and forth to make sure there was no jock nerd riot. And that's why everything got crazy inside the convention center, because most of the staff had gone to patrol other things.
Right. But you're correct. You're correct in that there is an age gap, I think.
Like, Anime Next? Forget about it. Like, it's one of those people there. Besides people actually running the event, there was mostly, like, I think a lot of high schoolers are in the cosplay because they have the time, whereas the older you get, the less free time you have to spend on your hobbies.
And the more you have to worry about if you're going to run for state judge, you don't want those cosplay pictures suddenly appearing.
Yeah, you don't want your future employer to find your MySpace account where there's pictures of you drunk, passed out, dressed as Ranma or something.
Oh, I gotta go.
Dressed as
I'll
girl
be right back.
Ranma.
I gotta do something.
I see. The point of the story is that there's this age difference between single people, and you notice I left out the group of the large number of anime fans in college, because inevitably, in very geeky dating scenes in college, guys outnumber the girls. And whereas I think if you're a girl in high school who's a geek, it makes you less dateable, because in high school there's this popularity game at play. At least there was in my high school. Maybe not. Maybe less so in a private school or a very academic-oriented school. But in a really crappy school, popularity takes
the precedent. Sadly, the vast majority, I think.
In a really crappy school, popularity takes precedent over academics. And so you, as the geek, lose. Nobody wants to date you because you're a nerd. Or so you think. Or you might just be a really shy nerd who doesn't realize that actually there's a lot of dating possibility, but you're too afraid to do anything about it.
Like me.
In college, there's a major shift where there are a lot of people who are available. Nobody's playing a popularity game, and being smart is suddenly much more attractive.
Yeah.
And then you can find people in campus clubs and such who have similar interests to you. So since you can suddenly find a lot more people with the same interest as you, there's this dating pool that opens up that's really ridiculous. So hopefully that will give hope to all of you in high school that, yes, college is just basically dating a lot of people, unless you're worried about your grades for some reason. And then I don't know what people do after that.
For those of you out of college, however...
Oh, you're boned. What are you going to date your coworkers? That seems like a bad idea. I don't know how people meet people. I also think I'm really against the convention hookup, because this leads into the second major problem. Did I already name two problems? Anime dating or convention or whatever, nerd dating. Is when you meet people at conventions, they don't live anywhere near you. So what are you going to do? If it continues in a relationship, it's going to be a long-distance relationship. Long-distance relationships are kind of ill-advised. They're not really stable, and there's a lot of problems. Like, when you're not near someone and you don't get to see them very often, you start to idealize them. The time that you spend with them is really exciting because you only get to see them for a few days every year. But the time that you're not with them, you're, like, forgetting that they had flaws, that they're a real human being, and that kind of thing.
You wouldn't know anything about that, would you?
I tend to stay out of long-distance relationships. I don't know. Right. I thought it was stressful when I was dating a guy who was going to college in the next town over. So during the school year, I could really only see him on weekends. The point of the story is, a lot of geeks get into long-distance relationships because isn't it thrilling to get an email from someone who has a crush on you where you're just like, oh boy, and your heart beats faster every time you check that inbox and get a little high from it. I'm not saying I haven't done that. I'm not saying I haven't met guys online.
Well, it's
who
kind
I
of necessary, I at least in some sense.
Yeah, because geeks are not good at face-to-face interaction. They're much better at formats like email, where you're mitigated. Is it that it a mitigated experience?
Well, mediated.
Mediated.
It's like, mitigated as well.
mediated and mitigated.
Yeah,
but there's you know, like, this barrier where you don't have to interact in a full-on way that can be very awkward. If you don't already have the right social skills anyway.
That's true.
And you don't end up embarrassing yourself if you can spell check all your emails, you know? Whereas in life, you can just say words like mitigated, when actually you're not really sure if that's what you mean by that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so when I first started dating Noah, he gave me ACO. Is it Project ACO?
Yes, Project ACO.
And, well, here is Greenwood.
Yep.
The anime. And Project ACO is one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Oh, he also gave me the Doctor Who blooper, like the Doctor Who parody episode. And I already knew that Noah could quote The Simpsons, so that met my criteria of what I was looking for in a guy. And I never thought I'd hit all three things, the ultimate trifecta of someone who both liked Simpsons, liked anime, and liked Doctor Who. Because a lot of Doctor Who fans were much older than me, and a lot of people who could quote The Simpsons didn't have any other interest in common with me, and I hadn't really explored people who were really into anime much.
Whereas I was looking for someone who would return my calls. That's really what I was looking
That's
for.
That's the important part?
Yeah.
Aw, come on. There's even more to it than that. I hope we're slightly more compatible than I was available and returning your phone calls.
Awkward. No, it's not true. At that time, I was trying to be less of a geek because fandom had made my life miserable for the prior year.
Then I sucked him back in.
Yeah.
Just as he was crawling out.
Aaron got me back in because it's difficult. When you first start dating someone...
Now he's geekier than ever.
You want to... I don't know about that. Anyway. I'm slipping in some ways. When you first start dating someone, you want to impress them. My problem is the only thing that I could impress anyone with is my fannishness. No one knows... Well, it's not really true. No one. I've since coming to New York, I've met people who are far geekier than I am to such an extent that I cannot compare. And it's very humbling, and it's probably something that made me grow as a person.
I used to think I had the tallest hair, but that trip to Graceland really opened my eyes.
I'm not really the dork of New York. Although maybe I am the dork of New York because the people I know geekier than me, they're all in Jersey. So I can claim at least Brooklyn, maybe.
I mean,
maybe just one of the boroughs. No.
Probably not.
Hal.
There's probably geekier people than you in Brooklyn.
I'm sure there are, and they're going to send me hate mail, and then they're going to come to my house.
Someone emailed AWO who lives in, like, Queens. They haven't emailed our show. That pisses me off.
Of course not. You don't listen to podcasters. Why would you do that?
Because you can hang out with them, like our listener Keith, who's awesome.
Yeah, who is awesome, but really like to be able to go to one of his things.
Yeah, you have to invite us way ahead of time.
Oh, right. So my point here is that I had no choice. I was lonely, and look...
What?
Those of you who are out there and you're wondering how do you meet girls?
And what you do is
how do you make this happen?
Teach the girls to play Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, that's one way. But I didn't do that.
That was an effective method for people I knew.
Really?
Yeah. Let's teach
that's
the
good.
Girls how to play Dungeons and Dragons.
Okay.
It works better if you have more girls in the game than guys.
I didn't think that. I didn't think of that, I should say.
Well, of course not.
How do you make this happen? That's the question.
Yeah.
I don't know what everyone else did. But my technique was always the 1-2 punch, right? Okay, on the one hand, you've got to be...
But your technique was never asking anyone
out. Right. I've never asked out a girl entire life.
Waiting for them to ask you out. My technique is asking out guys whom you are interested in and risking the crushing embarrassment of them turning you down because they might say yes.
I could never do that. I could never do that partly because I would not ask guys out because that's yaoi.
Uh-huh. Anything is business is a risk. Like, romance is a risk. Anytime, even if they say yes and you go out with them, you have to take the chance that you're going to be hurt terribly. Like, that's always a possibility.
That's true.
You're actually worse off if you've dated someone before and had your heart broken asking someone out the second time around because then you have that fear.
Well, that
but you also know the
might
rewards.
Might be true. I'm sure that differs from person to person. But there are ways to mitigate, if you will, the risk involved because if you walk up to someone cold and say, nice shoes, I mean, if you say, hey, you want to get dinner sometime or something like that, they can turn you down cold. I could never, not only could I never ask a girl out, I could never
you always say that.
Do that, where you just ask someone cold.
Yeah, you don't do that. You gotta figure out if they fall within your demographic.
Well, now, wait a minute. Forget about the demographic. Uh-huh. I would only ever be comfortable dating friends, people who were friends first. You know them, you have an established rapport with them.
Yeah.
And then you very gradually... At the margin, you might say, little by little, you know, you start doing little signs and then you sort of touch them a little bit and then, you know, and you see how they react and how they respond and you're looking nervous.
Anyway.
What's the matter?
Don't worry about it.
The point is, here was my tactic, all right? You got to come off as a little pitiful. You got to be a little pathetic.
That's a horrible strategy. Go ahead.
This is what worked for me.
Yeah, somehow it worked.
Well, it did. Look, yeah. I want to tell people the truth, right? What's the point if I don't? The only advice I can give is from experience, and the only advice I can give that isn't cliche, which nobody wants to hear, is true. So you be careful with how pitiful you are, because if you're too pitiful, you're going to send negative rays, and people are like, God, he's just doing that for attention.
It's true.
Look at this emo brat.
You're going to be careful not to send anti-girl rays.
Right. Like
Daryl Surratt.
Who
was eliminating every girl within a 3 foot, no, 5 foot radius with his beams of crazy.
And it's not biological. Well, it might be biological for a very unfortunate few. I can't get around that. Unfortunately, that might be true. Although, as we know by watching the...
Sid and Nancy,
right? What that movie demonstrates is that no matter how awful, crazy, weird you are...
Uh-huh.
There is someone for you.
Oh, yeah.
Usually there's probably more than one person.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know about two souls meeting and entwining, and I don't know about all of that, but there is no person for whom it is the case. There is no person on Earth for them.
What about the part where the population is 51% female and 49% male?
I guess...
Wouldn't that make the ratio way off?
We'll just have to swing, baby. That's the problem, is the 1% gender gap. It's the problem with this country.
That's not really the problem. The problem is guys who are too nerdy to find a date, and that girl nerds are instantly taken because there's an inherent shortage of geeky girls.
You gotta let me finish here with the strategy, because if they only get the cross right, you can't land the uppercut, so to speak, because then they're just gonna say, okay, well, if I act pathetic, that's enough. And maybe it is. If you're very lucky, you will find someone who wants to take care of you right off the bat.
Yeah, I don't really recommend that.
No, it doesn't usually go very well. Because you have to also be proficient in something. You have to be...
Nunchuck skills, bow stick skills.
You have to actually be...
Girls looking for guys
interested in something, fascinated with something. You have to be involved, engaged in some way. What is amazing to me is... how much it makes a difference. If you know anything about anything, that means you're some kind of nerd and everyone hates you. But in actuality, it doesn't even matter that much what your area of expertise is. If you can talk knowledgeably about it and make it interesting, you're going to get a crowd. People want to know people who have interests, who find things, who are even obsessed with things.
Right. Can you give the... girl's point of view? If you're going for
this is your point of view. There's no girl's point of view here.
You could be a girl.
Yes, you are a girl. However, this is your point of view.
All right, my point of view.
Because you're weird, right? We're all weird here.
Yeah.
I don't pretend to speak for my gender.
All right, fine.
I just speak for myself.
Here's my strategy in dating many a geeky guy is because they are geeks and they are very shy, you can just assume right off the bat that they're not going to ask you out. You're going to have to do all the work, particularly if they don't have a lot of experience in the romantic ways, which you might not either, but it doesn't matter. It's going to be up to you to make the first move and be like, hey, you're cool. Let's do something sometime. I mean, like a date. Sometimes it helps to be really specific.
Yeah.
I don't really believe in the vagaries of, you know, nonsensical waiting for the guy to ask you. Or like you show up and it's like not just one person. It's like all of his friends or something. It's like, I thought we were all going to see this together. No, that's not really a date.
You pulled that on me.
Yeah, but that's because I wasn't asking you out. I was still trying to work my way into asking you out, which I did.
Lame.
Several weeks, like 2 weeks later.
No, like that night.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right.
Oh, and Erin was so sick.
Yeah, I had a horrible flu-like cold, and I went with a bunch of people to see the Royal Tenenbaums, and I invited Noah, who got lost on the way to the theater, but my cold was so bad.
Making her ready for 5 years of that.
Yeah. My cold was so bad that I had to sit down in the movie theater lobby as my friends and I all waited for Noah. And afterwards, I went with Noah to a diner, even though it was ill-advised to stay up much longer, and also bought cold medication.
Yeah.
The point of this is, it's up to you to ask a guy out. I wouldn't, asking someone out point blank, that's ridiculous. You want to talk to the person for a long time, you build up a good rapport with them, and you look for subtle hints that they might like you, like the way they keep talking to you and they keep emailing you. And when you email them, you know, 20K email, and they email you a 40K email in response, then you know it's good. If they email you back with something like, what is it, AK, acknowledged?
Yeah.
A two-byte response. That either means that they are totally uninterested or some kind of very busy sysadmin, who's not going to write long emails because they don't have that kind of time, in which case you should only write them short emails.
Yeah.
Like dinner, question mark.
And then they respond real fast.
They say
rapid
yes.
Rapid fire like.
Exclamation point. Yes. But also, guys really like it when you laugh at their jokes. I'm not suggesting you laugh at jokes that aren't funny.
Although, God knows, Aaron has been laughing at mine for years.
I'm my mother's daughter. They kind of know, that's one way to kind of show that you're interested, is laughing at their jokes or acknowledging that it was a joke.
Which sometimes,
yeah,
if you can't figure it out to begin with.
I forget. There's this other problem, the third major problem with dating in nerd groups.
Problem
is
three
that,
of two, yes.
One, two, three. One, the age gap. And what was two? So the third-ish problem is that because in any given large circle of geeks, let's say only one-third of them are female, and that's a pretty fair number. Like, you're probably sitting pretty if one-third of the geeks are female. And I understand in college or high school anime clubs, it might be a much more favorable ratio that 50% of girls, the club might be 50 or even 60% girls, depending if it's the Yaoi club or not. But the problem is, like, let's say even if it's one-third of your group is female, but you live in Rhode Island and there are only 9 geeks in the entire state. And so that means 6 of them are male and the other 3 are female.
We know someone who is in this situation.
That means that inevitably, out of the 6 males who are there, one of them is probably undateable, just all the way through. You can't even talk to them or whatever. And the other 5 are probably going to date all 3 other chicks at one time or another. And this might cause ultimate strains on your relationship as a group, because the trouble with dating your friends who are in your immediate social circle is that if you have a messy breakup, your other friends have to take sides. And you have to avoid the other things. So kind of why I like dating people who are outside of or on the very fringes of my group of friends.
Oh, like
that way,
me.
That way, if it turns out horribly and I have to cut off things completely, I don't lose half of my friends ever. Or I don't have to get into a fight with my best friend because she used to go out with him in high school and now it's 6 years later.
It's funny because I have a different tact. I actually circulate from group to group, or I have
you
for most of my
each
life.
Group.
I unfortunately may have done so, or I don't know if I necessarily destroyed each group, but after a messy breakup, I would simply distance myself from that social circle completely, which
means you can't hang out with your ex-girlfriend's friends.
Right.
And they're usually going to take your ex-girlfriend's side if they were better friends with
her
anyway.
Well, that's okay. That's fine. Like, I don't mind that so much.
But, it can go either way. Like, if you date your close friends, there's that possibility that if the romance just doesn't spark, you can go right back to being close friends after a small awkward phase.
For you, not for me.
Yeah.
That would not work.
Yeah. Well, I don't hang out with ex-boyfriends still. I do the cut people off completely method because ex-boyfriends are often trouble. So are ex-girlfriends.
Like everything, are you an eclectic person? Then listen to Randomists, where we talk about things from Hitake Takashi to Fred Fred Burger.
The homepage is www.chimp.podomatic.com. And yeah.
So you want to hear people talk about Japanese cartoons?
You know, anime.
But you think the other anime podcasters just aren't nerdy enough?
Sounds like you need to join forces with the Anime World Order.
Where each week, 3 self-proclaimed experts offer you reviews.
Of titles both new and classic, news and commentary.
Rants, convention reports, interviews with fandom.
And some hentai and yaoi for good measure.
So search for anime in the iTunes music store.
Or visit our website at animeworldorder.com.
Anime World Order, revealing the truth about anime, one podcast at a time.
Okay, so but mostly I want to bring this up because of your story about those girls in Colorado who cosplayed as Dirty Pair, but they like completely broke up one anime club.
Yeah.
Then one of them moved to Florida and broke up another anime club.
Georgia. Where we're going.
Oh.
We may actually find out what happened to that
maybe
interesting little...
Maybe she continued breaking up anime clubs to this very day.
Maybe she did. I don't know.
It's
I
a
haven't
legend
really,
that anime clubs
I haven't
tell
kept up with
Warren.
Them for about 10 years. I keep expecting that someone's going to catch wind of this podcast and email me. And
well, Ichigo
say,
listens,
stop telling stories about us or something.
Ichigo listens, but nobody in Boulder, he doesn't know any of those
people.
Well,
he's the wrong age.
He's
the same
age
we're now
as
talking
me.
About when I was... Okay. When I was 15,
he was
median
like
age, the median age of the people I was hanging out with was about 30.
Okay.
Older than I am now. So those people, now they're 40. I can't give any good advice about this because I know how I am as a person is if I have been intimate with someone and we break up, then there's no way to, you can't go back.
Well, yeah, it depends on the person, but no, can't go back. So you're not going to tell any kind of even shortened, very not controversial story of, what are the Judy Pear characters' names?
What, Kay and Yuri?
Kay and Yuri. Kay and Yuri breaking up anime clubs as a cautionary tale of what not to do.
I mean, without, everyone is familiar with TED-rama.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Well, this was an instance of TED-rama, but I will make, I guess, a related anecdote. It doesn't really count as my life in fandom because it's going to be too generic.
Right.
So no one is implicated.
My life in fandom, but, filler arc.
Yeah. Omake.
Omake.
One thing that I've discovered from spending a lot of time in different geek dynamics is there's an instance that arises fairly often. It involves one person who is typically kind of depressive. Someone who is not one of the boisterous members of the group. Someone who is kind of a loner sometimes, but they've been there for a really long time,
right,
in this circle of friends. And for some reason, they'll start to withdraw from the group. They'll act kind of passive. They'll emote as though there's something wrong. And this has the effect, although one might not expect it initially, this has the effect of polarizing the group around them, because half the group wants to console them and say, you know, what's wrong? What's going on? What can we do? And they're kind of, the response is to sort of shrug their shoulders and say, oh, whatever. And the other side of the group, the other half, tends to feel like this person is just trying to attract attention and just being a jerk.
Yeah, well, there's being depressed and then there's being performatively depressed.
Well, I'm talking about performatively depressed,
right,
which doesn't necessarily mean
that they're not
that
really
they're
depressed.
Not really depressed, but
right,
I think it does mean that they are looking to cause some misery, because if they can't be happy, then no one else should either.
Mm-hmm.
And so by withdrawing, they cause this rift that, because I think that many geek circles are very close-knit,
yeah,
they don't have many friends outside it. If they do, they're probably not anywhere near as good as the friends that they have around them in their little geek circle.
Right.
So the end result of this is that the two sides war over this one person who's made a scene, and it has lasting effects. It's ugly, and TED-rama reigns supreme.
That wasn't the Kay and Yuri story I was thinking of.
Which was the Kay and Yuri
story? I
thought
that they dated people in the club and caused a massive amount of drama.
Yeah.
And got people warring against each other on one side or the other.
Yeah.
Until finally the club had to split in half.
Well, that happened, but
not because
the personality involved, particularly the Yuri personality involved, not the Yuri personality,
the
Yuri cosplayer,
yes,
was just, I think, someone who enjoyed TED-rama.
Okay.
As there are people who want to be, you know, the center of attention.
Yeah.
It's like, if we can digress for a moment, since I know we've gone over time anyway.
You have 3 minutes.
You remember that old show, My So-Called Life?
Yeah.
You've got Rayanne.
Yeah.
And she's the party girl.
Yeah.
And then you've got the other
Claire
one.
Claire Danes.
Claire Danes, who was...
I forget her name.
All right.
We'll just call her Claire Danes.
There's some scene, I think this was the episode with the gun in it, right? Someone's got a gun.
Yeah.
And everyone is on edge,
yeah,
except for Rayanne. She's eating it up, because she's like, oh, you know, this is, the tension's so great.
Because something's,
it's like,
happening.
Something is happening.
It's not boring.
This is awesome.
Yeah.
And everyone is talking to everyone else and mass hysteria. My advice to you is, if you are not like that person,
uh-huh,
you probably want to distance yourself from that person. That person, usually not very healthy.
I don't know. Rand is awesome.
Huh?
Rand is awesome. Well, she had a lot of problems.
Rand is a lot. Oh, Rayanne is awesome, and sometimes you need a friend to sort of get you in a little bit of trouble.
Yeah.
So
you need the brave friend who...
That's not what I'm talking about.
Okay.
I'm not talking about having a brave friend. I'm talking about having the friend who is constantly creating tension in the group because
they like it when
they feed on it.
Okay.
They love it. They love everyone whispering about everyone else.
I don't think that My So-Called Life is a fair example, because it's not like Rayanne brought the gun to school. And
no.
Also, I understand her feeling a lot in that instance where my school was really, really boring. And, like, if something happened, it was horrible and it was dramatic, but finally something was happening.
The world, your life is lived in the ordinary.
Yeah.
And there's not much you can do about it.
Yeah.
We watch anime and read books, especially geeks, because we're trying to get away from that.
Yep.
Not just in terms of wish fulfillment. And a lot of that is, there is wish fulfillment that comes out of it. But I think life is boring otherwise.
Yeah, well...
You do it to do something. To do something that's...
In the...
Not terribly risky.
In the kind of mid-90s when I was in high school, I was under this impression that nothing really big was going on in the world, that I was living in pleasant and therefore boring times, and I kind of hoped for some kind of, I don't know, political conflict, get things stirred up. Why did everyone have to be so agreeable all the time?
Well, may you live in interesting times.
I know, but then when it turned out I finally was living at the center of really interesting times, and there was a bunch of crazy crap going on, and people got really polarized politically in a way that I may have romanticized about the 60s earlier in my life, I suddenly realized that it's extremely uncomfortable to live in that kind of time where there's so much conflict. And so then instead of escapism from boredom, it's escapism from tragic reality.
It's true, but I haven't expressed myself that well.
But also, I missed out. Like, I didn't... Stuff really was going on in the mid-90s that I just didn't know about. Like, the internet was being built, and I had... You know, the internet in 1995 was very much like, yeah, I'll log online and read this list of Star Trek episode names, and that's about it. Let's see if there's anything about Animaniacs on here. Yep, one site. And okay, now I'm done. There wasn't interesting new content every day.
Nonsense. You were on FidoNet. You remember.
I don't even know what FidoNet is.
You could have been on FidoNet. There were areas.
I was not on FidoNet. The point is, there was stuff going on. Like, out there in the Hubble telescope was taking pictures of an ever-growing universe. A lot of astronomical discoveries were made, and I didn't know about it until now. And when I look at dates like that where they're like, yeah, and we figured this out and took this picture in 95, and I'm like, I was around. I used to watch the news every morning, and all they talked about was the O.J. Simpson trial and not look at this awesome photo of deep space. And there was there was stuff going on in the world, but it's just, I guess, hindsight is 2020. Only history, it's always looking backwards on it. It's not when you're right in the moment.
Narrative is created in reverse. You live your life forwards, and you can only make sense of it by looking back.
Yeah.
And stringing your memories together. That can be a problem. I want to try and be a little more specific. I think that, at least when I say wish fulfillment, I think that a lot of teenage boys love superhero comics because they see these super strong superheroes, you know, exerting their will to power in a way that they themselves cannot. And they say, yeah, I can live vicariously through these superheroes.
Yeah, and it's something I really can't identify with at all. Like in that Sandman, which was the Sandman graphic novel with Barbie's Dream, where where it talks about in the afterword or the introduction or something, he says how superhero comics are very much a boy's dream.
Yeah.
And that's why I never liked superhero comics. I can't identify with them at all. And I just, it doesn't resonate with me in the way that it does with even other girls.
All boys want to be superheroes. All girls want to be princesses. They all want to discover that their parents are not their own.
Right.
So says Neil Gaiman.
But it's like, I don't really want to be a princess either, necessarily, unless that princess is Nausicaa. In which case, yes. Like, if it's an awesome princess, bring it.
That's not the kind of wish fulfillment I'm talking about here.
Right.
I'm talking about the kind of wish fulfillment which is, I wish something would happen to me. And
there's that great quote that is in the documentary Speed with Timothy Speed-Levitch, where...
The documentary is not Speed.
Anyway, the point of it is, and I might get the name wrong here totally, that he's quoting at some point Thomas Mann or someone who got hit by a car and wrote in his diary about the experience that he had been very bored and felt that his entire life nothing had happened to him. And as he got hit by the car, he felt like the sense of relief that now, at last, something was happening to him. I thought I would never witness a major historical event in my lifetime. And no, I saw the World Trade Center burning down. I was right there. I was trying to go apply for a job. Yeah, there was history happening live and in person right in front of me. But it was one of the first moments in my entire life that I finally felt like, in like the quote exactly, that something at last was happening to me. The whole world changed in this moment, and I was there in person.
And I made things happen for myself throughout my young life.
Uh-huh.
Like, one of these days we'll do the bio podcast when I tell all the ridiculous stories.
Yeah, where are our bios?
All right, never mind that. Yes, can I wrap it up? I'm saying that it turns out, in reality, having stuff happen to you?
Yeah.
Frightening, risky, and not for all personality types.
It's pretty uncomfortable.
I made things happen and discovered only later in life, it's better if they happen only in fiction. I play D&D weekly, and I love, love, love it. My weekly game of D&D is something that keeps me going at some point.
It's pretty scary.
Maybe.
I stopped playing D&D because it took up so much time, and I wanted to have that time to edit this podcast. So I will not play Dungeons & Dragons again until such time as I'm unemployed.
Which will be soon enough.
Yeah.
But there, it's almost as though something is happening to me. Something bad happens, the consequences are minor, if anything.
Right. So you get the experience with a barrier between you and the experience.
Mediated?
The mediated experience of actual things happening to you.
Yeah.
It's just like emailing someone instead of talking to them in real life or even on the phone, maybe.
And there's a much longer discussion to be had on this that's not for this show because this show is out of time. So here I am. I'm 28 years old, and I've dedicated a lot of my life to fanish activities, science fiction and anime and gaming. I'm sure that I have done more of that than any one activity, any other activity. Eating, sleeping.
Watching sports,
spending time in school, working. I'm sure that my fanishness comes out ahead. And I'm comfortable with that, but for the fact that there is a corporeal world around me with stuff going on that's important.
Yeah.
Really important. And I want very much to believe that I'm not just leading myself. What is it that people say? They want to get lost in a novel. They want to shut off their minds.
Yeah.
They want to turn off their brains and just enjoy it.
Uh-huh.
I want very much to believe that I'm not doing that.
Right.
That
you're engaging your brain, but it's just not.
Well, I'm engaging my brain, but this is important. There's tidbits of the human soul that are buried in there, even in D&D, maybe especially in D&D. The point is, it's tough for me to reconcile the amount of time that I spend living in castles in the sky with the omnipresent political, social, and economic world around me.
I'm really obsessed with subcultures and cultural movements, and the idea of riding a wave of a trend of a generation of a certain time, you know, like what Fear and Loathing is about or whatever. But I want to, you know, I want to ride that wave. I want to be on the crest of it. But I don't want anything to do with normal stuff. I don't like normalcy. So my motives are a bit different. And if I'm not involved with normal people doing normal political stuff, all the better. I want to know what the fringe people have to think. Hey, Hot Tears of Shame is back, and there's a really freaky new episode of the Patrick Macias podcast. He interviews a total weirdo. But even though that guy's super weird, it's really interesting to listen to him because he's not an everyday person. I don't mean Macias, I mean the guy he's interviewing. No, Patrick Macias is also obsessed with subcultures and riding
Patrick
the cultural
Macias
wave.
Is not an everyday person
no,
either.
No, he's also, I think I also share his obsession with wanting to know about subcultures. The end.
Conhor.
We don't have time to talk about that.
No, we've already talked about it.
Conhor.
I just want to end on the point.
Conhor is just someone who goes to a bunch of cons.
I know,
all the time.
I just want to end on the.
It's not someone who sleeps with everyone
Conhor.
At a con. It's a person who is a whore for going to cons. Are you calling me one? You trying to sell more t-shirts?
No.
What's your point?
Conhor.
Whatever. Anyway.
Before she came back to my place.
Whoa, my mom listens to this show. This is why it's dating advice.
Hi, Miss Finnegan.
I see.
Sorry.